A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is the CC Radio podcast.
It was just the most massive thing I've ever seen. To tell you the honest truth, I thought, well, we're the only ones left on this planet. Something's happened. We've missed something here.
The fear that went in me when I seen it was just the feeling, I'd say it was fear, but I've never felt that feeling before in my entire life.
It's a weird feeling, you can't explain it when you don't know. You feel like you're being followed, but you don't know what it is.
We had two to our right, another one in front of us, another one to the left, and another one just across the road, shaking the daylight out of the tree. All we get was a big red eye.
I remember waking up and looking at the end of the bed, and there was a figure there, almost insect-like, and then I blacked out.
Welcome to the show, everyone. You are listening to Believe Paranormal and UFO Radio. My name is Cade Moyer, and thanks for tuning in. If you've had an encounter, get in touch with me. My email address is believe@ccradio.com.au, or you can message me on Facebook at facebook.com/believeUFO Radio. If you enjoy this episode, there are a few things you can do to help the show. Firstly, you can go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and review. Or you can share the show around social media with your friends and family, and that will help us grow. We are back. We are refreshed and hydrated, and we are ready to kick on to part two of tonight's live episode. So for those who may be just joining us or listening to part two of the podcast, we are joined today by Dean Harrison from Australian Yowie Research. And if you are listening to the audio-only version of this, highly recommend jumping onto the website and looking at that, because you'll be able to watch the video version of this as well. So, where we left off last episode, or previously on this live stream, the topic of predator mode when it comes to the Yowie. This is something that I hear quite a lot, and I don't know if this is a term that that you're familiar with, but this is just how it's kind of described, where the individual can be having an encounter with a Yowie, but they can't see it.
Ah.
They hear it moving around. They see things moving and things like that. What's the go with this, and what's your opinion on it?
Okay, well, as we say, there's two types of experiences you can have. There's the sighting, and you can also have an encounter. What you're referring to is an encounter. It's something that you have happening around you. You can't quite see it, or you can't see it well enough, particularly at night time.
Yeah, okay.
Now, I would have to say that probably 80% of people's experiences or encounters at night time are probably just native animals.
Yeah.
Right? It's little things can sound so big at night.
Koalas are a great example of that.
Particularly if you're Japanese. Now, the koalas, you know, if you're not familiar with the sound of koalas, they can give off the most guttural sound. If you're not familiar with it, such as I said before, Japanese, we had experiences with Japanese in Springbrook who totally flipped out over a koala, thinking predator, basically. Yeah. So, you know, you've got all that in the equation, but you need to take out a lot of people's interpretations of noises just being simply incorrect. Again, you know, nighttime being as silent as it is, the sound carries a lot more at night than it does during the day. That is fact. And people's imaginations get a little bit more wild, particularly if you're a Yowie researcher.
And it's probably worth noting that depending on where they're doing their research, so I'm going to relate a lot of stuff probably back to my region up in Cairns, which is, for those who don't know, very tropical type of landscape. And I guess the rainforest kind of acts as a sound blanket. So it traps everything in there too. So what you think you're hearing is maybe you think is right next to you could be hundreds of meters away. And it's just bouncing off essentially the canopy of the forest. I think that kind of leads into a lot of what you're saying there too.
Yeah. Well, yeah. If you get into the true predator mode of one that is there, a real one, and, you know, again, I'll draw on my own experience of Ormo. Yeah, something that didn't know that I was there to begin with. And so it was making all the noise in the world, but it didn't care. But when it realized that I was there, behaviors changed dramatically. It went to stealth mode, predator mode, and it truly was predator mode. So it went from branches coming down, small foliage coming down, to nothing. Couldn't hear anything. And then suddenly all you knew was that twig broke, but it was closer this time.
Oh, wow.
And you know, you're sort of here or there, and you're questioning all this in your mind. You know, was it or was it not anything to be concerned about? And then another one, but this was closer again. You think, well, that's really odd. But this one was thick enough that you go, no. It was too thick to break on its own or the natural causes. And then you hear the foliage slowly parting and leaves that are entwined coming undone, and they flick off each other as you part. And then, you know, and then it stops, and then you hear it continue, and the leaves sort of brushing against the body, and then you know, you're in a bit of trouble right now. When it came down to Buck's footage, we all know, he heard nothing. He knew nothing of them being there. And these are big, big creatures, and the foliage there, the undergrowth there, that was pretty thick. I mean, it was pretty dense. There's a lot of leaves, there's a lot of twigs, yet he heard nothing. He didn't hear them come.
And that's really fascinating to me, because the creature that you captured, I think we do have a little bit of a comparison. I just want to get it on the screen before I kind of show it off. Is that, here it is. So I'm just going to put this up on the screen.
Yeah.
And this thing is... What's this, 10, 11 foot tall, 12 foot?
It would have to be. Now, I measured this myself. I was there, and this is the only logical area that I can see where this footage was. And others kind of disagree with me a little bit. I know Gary particularly says, I think Buck was down here because I was sitting here, da, 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 da. It doesn't work. I mean, I just cannot see how. This is the only logical place that I can see that it could be.
Yeah.
And you can see by the comparison here,
it
works.
It matches pretty closely.
It does. And you've got that tree that comes right down through the middle.
Yep.
You've got the fawns that are about the right height as well. And you've got the big tree behind, which they entered from behind, obviously, as you would have seen from the footage. So, so if you draw an 8-foot line there, it was 8 foot right at that line, and you extend that above, well, that's pretty heavy. And I know he's probably listening right now, Glenn the truckie from Witherin. I know you'll be here tonight. I know you're there. Now, this isn't too far away from where Glenn's encounter was.
And Glenn had an encounter with a big boy.
And Glenn's nodding right now. He's going, yes, yes, yes. Now, Glenn's was roughly about the same height, same size as what you're looking at right now.
Oh, wow.
Yet on the other mountain range, okay? Not that far away. Now, there's others as well on that other mountain range that are roughly about the same size, same proportions. If you don't know Glenn's, we'll go in and have a look at our Witherin audio report on the AYR website. It's all there. Now, Glenn talks about this creature that was... jumped off an embankment and landed on the road in front of his truck as he's on a decline. He's locked it up, he slid, and as he comes right up towards it, he stops just in time. And he says, you know, this thing showed biological characteristics basically of a human in terms of emotion. You know, the first one was the shock on the face. The next one was embarrassment. The third one, what was that?
That was anger. And then and then this thing decided to slam its fist down on his bonnet, which, as I would call, is a real brown pants moment. To be in a situation like that, to have this creature, because he was in quite a large truck too. And he, from the retelling, because Glenn was also a guest on the podcast, from his retelling, he had trouble seeing the top of the creature. That's scary when you're in basically an earth-moving truck, that you're in a vehicle that's so large that this thing, you're coming up to its belly button at your eyes. This is terrifying to think that you were potentially, well, that your crew was so close to such an aggressive creature as well. But not only one, two.
Or there's actually other things out there as well that we just can't explain.
Yeah, and that's something that we'll touch on shortly. But what really blows my mind about this is that this creature, potentially 10, 11 foot tall, that thing would weigh half a ton. And it made no noise. How is that possible?
This buck's deaf. He's probably drunk at the same time.
This thing was stumbling all over the place.
The buck was.
Yeah.
This is the thing. And again, you know, if you get back into a lot of the documentation from the Aboriginals, the early documentations from the 1800s and early 1900s, prior to today's technology and today's Aboriginals, they will tell you about Featherfoot. They will tell you, you know, why he's called Featherfoot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... I didn't know they had a name for him like that.
It's called Featherfoot.
Wow. It is intriguing because...
As it says here, I mean, they can come upon you with no noise.
Yeah. And you've seen these creatures move in real time with your own eyes. It's... These things aren't floating. Like, I want to touch on like a couple of these woo elements. Like, people.
Well, there's an anomaly.
Okay.
I have a page of anomalies, and one of the anomalies is floating.
Really? Okay. You've just opened up a whole other avenue here. It is
something we hear quite often. The motion that it makes is in a floating manner.
Yes, yes, yes. I've heard this many times from people who have come on the podcast, not even come on the podcast, but just wanted to say, hey, this is what I saw, because it's hard. It's so hard for people to come forward and talk about, hey, I saw a Yowie. That's hard enough.
And then to explain it in such a way.
Exactly. Oh, I saw this thing float across the walkway. Mm. And it's like, what?
Well, Gary seems to think it's just in the way their joints move.
An optical illusion?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to be stealth and they have a method to put their foot down, perhaps on the sides, rolling around, on the sides, rolling around, as not to cover so much ground bluntly. And therefore you're putting your knees in a certain context and your whole body, and you get used to doing this all the time, particularly if you're trying to be stealth with all these humans around everywhere in your area. Now, yeah, that's an idea, but yeah, a lot of people say, well, I just can't explain it. He just went across just like he was gliding, just in that smooth motion.
I've had people, multiple people, contact me and say they've seen these things float and then disappear before their very eyes.
Oh, I hate getting onto that subject.
What's your thoughts on that?
I don't have thoughts on it. I'm not allowed to have
this. is it too out of the the scope of what you think this creature is.
I think
is.
Flesh and blood is hard enough as it is. Let's not make it any harder.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's fair because I think, and not to say to anyone who's witnessed this, but you've kind of seen something that's not supposed to exist. It's paradigm breaking. It's world shattering. Like these are things that turn everything upside down. Like you've seen a bloody monster.
It is life changing, as I say, monotonously. That for so many people, and I know people, and or people who have known people who've died because they just couldn't handle it.
Yeah,
because it plagued their minds so much. It was just, it consumed them. And I know what that's like. I've been one of these people, particularly after I got hit. It took me 8 months to get a good night's sleep because there's all these things bouncing around inside my head, inhibiting me from sleeping, basically, because there's more answers, more questions than answers. And the main question was, why? Why did it hit me?
Yeah.
What did I do? I wasn't doing anything wrong. I was minding my own business.
I could imagine there's a real victim complex when it comes to this.
And exactly. That's how I felt.
Yeah.
And it was almost like it could be a human on human interaction. That's how it felt. That good analogy, because that's how I. Yeah. I had PTSD for about eight months.
Yeah.
And it was a real victim sort of mentality of why, what did I do?
And the problem is, you wouldn't have anyone to go to talk about that.
Oh, just me. Yeah. Just me. Just like everyone else, they'll come to us. I come to me.
Or me. But the thing is, like, before you existed, before AYR was a thing, like, there was nothing for this. This is something that people laughed about at the pub. If you even dared to share this, you were ridiculed. And, you know, that stigma still exists today, but I genuinely believe it's starting to get better. I think it's starting to disappear a bit.
There's been a huge change. Well, obviously, AYR has a big part to play in that. But I think the social media, etc. I can digress a lot about on this subject. Now, back in the older days, nobody had anyone to talk to about it.
Yeah.
There was no communications. It's a long way between one house and the other on horseback. And so you have an encounter like that, and again, the fear of ridicule, as you're saying. You kept it to yourself, or you may have told a family member or a close friend at best. So it lived and died with you.
Yeah.
And we don't have records of any of that. So as time evolves, some of them leak out into the media, and they're the only ones that we want. The only ones that we hear of from those days, say, like, you know, early 1800s, the first being 1825, right into, you know, mid-1950s, nobody had anyone to document this stuff, and it's so important. So much lost. All this history is lost. We don't have – all we have is what's in the newspapers now, which we have a trove of. But even today, and this is important, even today – if someone has a sighting, they don't go to the media. So you're not going to get these newspaper sightings. Yet we get hundreds and hundreds and hundreds coming in all the time. And we can at least document it and do things properly. But all those people of yesteryear, it's gone. I mean, all this history is lost.
Yeah.
And this is another thing. Why the Aboriginals, a lot of the First Nations people, are now coming to us because they're uniquely aware that their culture, etc., is being watered down a lot, and a lot of their stories that have been handed down from generation to generation, they're all being lost, and they're fearful of this. We have a lot of them coming to us now saying, we want this documented properly.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Because it is... For Aboriginal culture to share that willingly is, like, that's astronomical.
Back in the old days, I mean, it was the concept of, say back in the 1800s and 1900s, It was the concept that if you had to talk to a white person about the Yowie per se, you had to get permission from an elder.
Yep.
And it's not like that anymore. But even back in those days, it wasn't quite the case either, because documentation shows in the 1800s, a lot of the Aboriginals were talking to journalists and writers, all the way through that period. They were talking openly. And now they're coming to us and they're talking with great enthusiasm.
That's incredible, because it's this untapped resource of knowledge that's 100,000 years old, that the history is just passed down generation to generation. To put it into an archival stance with you is phenomenal. It is something that will, if the data you get from that can be extracted in a way that is, not useful, but a way that you can learn from it. Who knows?
It's protected forever. And once it's with us, it's protected. It's with the Australian National Library, Trove, etc. Anything that's on our website is protected forever.
But also the knowledge that you can gain for future expeditions and things like that. It's, you just don't know. They could just give you this tiny, tiny whisper of information that just turns the whole game on its head for you.
Well, it's just like some of that information that I showed before. You know, they can appear upon you with almost no noise. And then also what was interesting about was all the abductions that they were talking about back in the early to mid-1800s, where they're talking about the women and children being taken at force. And I did an expedition over in the Solomon Islands, where we interviewed, I'll digress, that a lot of the natives that worked in Honiara, they lived out in the hills, in villages, remote. I mean, these guys were so fit. There's no problem for them to just like jog back, 10, 15 kilometres back home, up through the hills. But if nighttime came and they were on their way home, they would hide underneath the thickest foliage they could find and wait until daylight because of the fear of the hairy man.
Really?
Yeah. And in these journals here that I'm talking about, we're still talking about the fear at nighttime, not wanting to leave the camp at night. Exactly the same.
This might sound absolutely incredibly ignorant of me, but I find it incredible that such landlocked communities can have this type of creature living there. Because this is one of the great things about, the Bigfoot, the Yowie, is that it kind of exists everywhere. You know, there's not really a continent that hasn't got it, apart from Antarctica, that we know of, that hasn't really got this creature. So for it to get onto such landlocked islands like that, that is, how does it get there?
Well, you see, it began about, I don't know how many years, but I can say when it ended. It ended about 7,000 years ago when the Torres Strait was flooded. So there's a land bridge that came down through Indonesia, and it's been shown in science, paleontology will show you, yes, they this is how the Aboriginals got here, etc. Well, there's something else that came down through there as well.
Yeah.
And then once it got landlocked, it was trapped here. Now, they'll also say that the Aboriginal skull began gracile like ours, and then there was a percentage of DNA all through the Torres Strait, all through the islands, that changed it. So back 200,000 years ago, 100,000 years ago, 50, whatever, the world was a melting pot of DNA. We're all interbreeding. And science paleontology says that they believe that a lot of the women and children, particularly the women, they're taken from other groups and they're bred with. So therefore, all this DNA was all being mixed, and you can see how all these different species and genus and were popping up all over the places because they're all mating. So that being said, as they're coming down through the Torres Strait, there was something else there that bred with them. and change their DNA to, you know, the 5 to 7% mark, made them look a little bit different. So then all that flooded, and whatever's here is still here. And I think once the science finds, you know, the first fossil record, it's going to be a big race.
That's a question that gets raised a lot. Is that how come a body hasn't been found?
That's one of the more simple answers, because it is so obvious. They were burying their dead 200,000 years ago. Why wouldn't they be now? You know, where you find one, you'll find another not too far away. That is fact. So if that's the fact, then you know that if Uncle Charlie dies over there of natural causes, you're not going to kick a few leaves over him and let him to be picked apart by predators, smaller animals, or be found, more importantly, by humans.
Yeah.
If one gets hit by a car or a truck on the side of the road, which could happen because they make very foolish mistakes on the road, and you can't help but believe it's deliberate to some of them. So if one of them gets clocked by a vehicle, you've got another one there to take. And I think that's the reason they always work in twos.
Yeah,
they always
work like in twos. Like a buddy system.
So if you're looking at the footage that Buck took, for example, here's a classic example, right? So you've got the big one that comes out from the tree, and he leans over and he extends this big long arm out and he picks something up. Out comes the other one from behind him. Now, what does the one behind him do? Now, they both know that there's humans in the area because what are we doing? We're playing classical music at the time as an attractor. Now, this one that's come out and he's picked something up. Now, he's looking directly at base camp. The one behind him, what's he doing? So he's back to him.
Yeah, it's like they back up to each other.
They've backed up to each other. The other one's watching the back because they know humans are in the area. So this one's, he's picked something up, and if you watch it really carefully, he's gone over like this and he's handed it over the shoulder of the other one, and the other one's taken it. Now he's gone back down for the second time, picked something else up and handed it back. I've been on that location. I cannot work out what it is. There's nothing there that I can see that is worth attention.
Yeah, it's fascinating because I've seen the like that raw footage and it blew my mind. Like it is genuinely the most amazing thing that I've ever seen when it comes to Bigfoot or Yowie related, and the camaraderie between these creatures. That's
what I say. That's how they operate. I've always said, incredible. When you find one, you'll find another not too far away. The way they operate it is exactly, that's the textbook. This is what I'm saying. So if you have one that dies, you're not going to find their body. Of course you're not going to find their body.
I have a question for you. You say, I have so many questions for you, Mr. Dean Harrison. This buddy system, do you think the buddy system exists because it's not just Yowies in the bush?
Oh.
Because.
Yeah. Yes.
Because right. The thing is, I hear a lot of stories of unknown creatures that aren't Yowies in the bush. Bipedal, but not Yowies. And you just happened to capture one of these.
Well, Buck did anyway.
Well, Buck is this absolute magic man when it comes to this stuff. It genuinely gives me chills looking at this because I've heard stories of creatures like this in the bush. A good friend of mine, Attila, was out shooting a documentary around this topic. There was something in the bush that wasn't a Yowie and it wasn't a person. It was something like this. And it changes everything when something like this is out there. And now a quick word from our
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Sponsor. Also, are you wanting more content? Why not become a Believe Plus member? You'll get access to exclusive podcasts and episodes that aren't available to the public. Not only that, you'll also get our regular feed without any ads. Head to believepod.com/plus to sign up today for just $5 a month.
Well, this is where I don't want to put myself out on a limb and say too much. I won't speak my mind totally on it, but I do have an opinion, and my guys know my opinion, I guess. Now, if you watch the moving shots of this, it's behind a tree stump. And you can see there's flaws in the stump, and the light signature is shining through. The heat signature is shining through. Now, this thing is watching Buck, and I think this may have been the first radio communication we received from Buck when he said to us, "Hey, I've got something in front of me, and it's watching me." I think this may have been it. Yeah, so it's behind this stump, and it's watching, it's watching, it's moving its head, up and down, it's looking from around it, etc. Yeah, that's, to me, that's pretty scary. That's pretty disconcerting, especially, could you imagine being out there on your own, heavily in the bush?
Secluded, away from...
Obligated, heavily obligated in the bush. And something like this comes upon you silently. Again, this is where I come down to missing people, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all. Not at all. But when there's scary things lurking out there in the bush, when, you know, again, I do have my opinion, I might talk about it another time. Yeah, disconcerting. So this thing, there's this thing, right? So there's this thing. But then there's another one. There's another one that looked a little bit different. It had a more of a cloaked sort of head. We've got another story about this. Now this here. Now I'm not sure whether this is the same one or not, but you can see that it has, you can see the shoulders and you see the leg below, and there's those hot eyes as it's looking to its left. Now, the direction that it's looking is towards base camp. He's looking towards us. Now, we were in very, very thick bush, probably, I'm guessing now, probably about 50, 60, 100, no, probably about 60 metres, 80 metres, I don't know, somewhere in that vicinity. Could have been 100 metres. And he's looking down towards us, and again, we're playing that music, and these are some of the first images that Buck took. Now, this doesn't look like the two that came out from behind that tree, does it?
This thing looks skinny. It looks... It's completely different. And the thing that came to my mind with this first one, where you don't get to see this figure as much, is that I wonder if the thought of a Jundjedi came through your mind. So the smaller version of a Yao, and that's really putting it in a poor
well,
term.
Well, no, because it's a completely different shape to the ones. I mean, the other ones we saw, they were in the perfect shape, the perfect form of a human, but without a neck, which is, you know, the classic description. These things look different, and I don't think I want to come up against or find one of these things by myself in the bush at night.
Have you ever heard of the term of a rake?
Yeah.
Because I'm going to say, man, this is what this looks like. You know, like this looks like something. Large, something spangly, something that's kind of just not natural.
I mean, this is the reason, as I've said before, that most natives of most continents don't walk the bush at night and say, don't walk the bush alone at night.
Yeah.
Yeah, there seems to be stuff out there. Now, that is really freaky. Now, the backstory on this, the forward story on this, there's a forward story. 2 weeks later, we're at the same location. Myself, Gary, Buck, and I think Shannon, and we decided we're going to go out on a reconnaissance. It was roughly about midnight. And we'd gone down to a place where we called the Crossroads, which is about 100 metres away from camp in the other direction to where this was. We'd had very little action that night, and all the signs had gone. We thought these things had moved on. We got down to the Crossroads, and myself and Gary said, hey, we're just going to go back and get our little camping chairs and hook to our backpacks before we go off and on this hike. So as we're heading back, we're in a direct line with base camp and Buck. Buck had his thermal, because now we've got five, and he's watching us. He's watching myself and Gary walk all the way back up this straight line, up this dirt track, all the way back to base. And then we get this radio feed, and he says, did one of you just walk off into the bush? Negative. Are you sure one of you haven't walked in? No, haven't. Now, Gary's standing behind me as we're walking. We're walking in line. And the way myself and Gary walk, the way we operate, is that we'll walk in tune of each other. Each step is the same. So it sounds like one person as we walk.
Oh, right.
So left, right, left, right, left, right. Yeah. Been around for a while.
Not just a pretty face.
Not our first rodeo. Buck can't see two of us. All he can see is one of us because Gary's like an eclipse, right? The cries a lot. And out from behind us, from the left-hand side, comes that.
Wow.
Out from the left, and it walks straight across the track behind us into the bush on the other side. And guess what? We heard nothing. We didn't even know it happened. We had no idea it happened. And Buck was – it was a big deal for Buck.
Yeah.
Because he didn't press record. He didn't think anything was going to happen, right?
Yeah, of course.
So I mean, you know, we're always just panning around, we're looking at this, looking at that, see something, okay, hit record. And he's just doing – in this situation, he's doing exactly the same thing. He's just watching us go back to base. And out it comes behind us. And he said it was about 6 feet tall. He said it was stooped. Bipedal without a question. He's watching it walk. And he said the head was kind of cloaked like this and it resembled that. And it came out from left to right, went into the bush. And he is still talking about it to this day. And that was months ago. He is still about it.
That's scary. That's scary because who knows what this is? Who knows what it's capable of? And
now who wants to be out there alone is what I'm saying.
Exactly. That's actually...
That is scary stuff.
Yowies are scary, but the unknown...
There's a lot of energy out there.
Absolutely. The bush is alive. The bush is 100% alive. And, man, I don't know about you, but, like, you telling me that, I actually got chills. Because does that change your mindset going out there?
Oh, I think there's always security in numbers, and these things behave differently when you're in numbers. If you're alone, they behave differently, just as they do between the contrast between day and night.
Yeah.
They always feel safer in numbers. A lot of the American Bigfoot has said we're absolutely mad for sleeping in hammocks, particularly that night when the two came out. Well, actually, all of these came out. They all came out to play, and yet we slept in hammocks for between 3 and 6 o'clock in the morning or whatever time it was. Well, they slept. I didn't. Human chainsaws.
How could you sleep after that?
I don't know. Go ask them. Well, Buck was drunk.
It makes sense.
Gary's crying in his pillow.
He was exhausted. He was dehydrated, all the tears.
That's it.
Look, that is... That's incredible, Dean. I have absolutely no words. And, like, the thing is, there's no question that these things don't exist. You've captured it. Like this is that is just absolute photographic evidence that.
And what it does is raise more questions and answers, and as it will.
Yeah.
But we're in a good position. We've got the right equipment. We've proven that. We just need to. I always say it's a numbers game. We need to be out there more often because.
You're out there more often, you more chances of catching that
it's
fish.
It's a numbers game. Crossed paths with them at one stage. We were very, very fortunate for this because we saw the signs before it happened.
Yeah.
So we had a reason to be there because we followed the signs.
Yeah, that's insane. It's
and that was based on two decades of experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the difference that you have to a lot of other researchers out there is that I think there's a lot of hearsay out there. A lot of guessing and a lot of matter of fact is the case when it comes to Yowies. The difference with you is that you've invested so much of this of your time, of your wealth, your dollar values. These things just don't happen. You know, the research that you do, the reports that you put out, they all cost. Your time, there's a value to that.
It costs a lot of money as well.
Yeah, indeed. And for anyone to say, nah, that's not what it is an absolute injustice to the decades of work that you've genuinely put into this stuff. It's I think you're doing an absolute service to Australia, to the world actually, because you know it's no secret the footage that you captured, that your team captured that buck. Was luckily enough to find is some of the best footage that's out there, and it's held up to so many people who may think otherwise. There's so much history that goes along with what you've done. Is that there's no bullshit with you?
It goes to show that they can be filmed.
Exactly. And if it's okay with you, Dean. I want to open up this last, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes to potentially some questions from the listeners.
Because 11 minutes.
11 minutes. We'll go a little bit over time because, you know, it's a special occasion. But I saw a really good question from a gentleman by the name of Lionel, and it was a long, long time ago, so I'm kind of going off memory with it. But he said that you did a TV interview where you said one of these creatures needs to essentially be captured. I'm absolutely paraphrasing that, but is that still an objective for you? Or is that still something that you want to do?
I've never said that before. I have no recollection of saying that where I've said one of them needs to be captured. What I have said in the past is I have had one dealt with.
Yeah.
That might be what he's referring to.
Maybe. It's it is. Do you think one should be captured? I do.
I don't think you have a chance of capturing one at all.
Not an option.
It's not an option.
Yeah.
Look, it's not in my psyche. It's nothing that I think about. It's one of these grey areas. But I just do what I do.
Yeah.
I'll just leave it at that. I don't have any thoughts on that subject per se.
And it's probably the best way to go because if you always want to have that mindset of capturing one, you're just going to come home disheartened.
I think it's just do what you do and that's what we do and just keep one foot in front of the other. Just keep doing what you do.
Absolutely. I think that's great. So,
philosophical.
It's very deep. So a bit too deep for me. So here's a great question, and I'm gonna butcher everyone's names. I haven't got my glasses on. Taliska asked Dean, "Why do you think the Blue Mountains is such a hot spot for Yowies?"
Because the vast mountain ranges and the deep valleys. If you've been there before, you'd understand. It is so remote. There's areas there that have been untraversed. It is mind-boggling. Yet on the outskirts and surrounding is the human habitat So they're going to impact.
Good question. Good answer. Shane asks, has Dean heard Yowie's whistle or imitate humans to play tricks on them?
Hi, Shane. I know who you are. Yeah, absolutely. They'll communicate with each other, making animal noises. Now, if you've been spent time with the natives of different areas or different countries, they will tell you, if you want to talk to somebody or get someone's attention, you take the tone out of the voice. So therefore you make noises. You take the tone out of the voice. You make clicky noises, and you can make animal noises, particular animal noises that you can associate, like, okay, that's such and such. You can communicate with a particular type of animal. So yes, absolutely they will.
This is a really great question.
My mouth's getting dry. Sorry, folks.
No, that's all good. I'll ask this long question. So this comes from Ben Elder. Dean, how would you describe the sense you are honing where you are picking up Yowie's being nearby? So maybe not worded great, but let me reword that. Dean, how do you sense that Yowie's are nearby? Is there some telltale signs? Because a lot of people say the bush goes dead. Like a switch gets hit, a vacuum is made. Do you encounter anything like that?
Oh, again, this is one of these fringe topics that we can talk about at depth, because I've got my own experiences in different capacities regarding the same sort of thing. So I understand what you're saying. You know what? I don't really want to go there. For us right now, it's kind of like, I mean, there's different ways. I mean, we just did the physical thing, how we found these guys. So we did the physical thing just by finding the signs and knowing what we're looking for. That's how we found them. But there's other times where you just get the feeling. I can talk a lot more about that, not just my own circumstances, situations, experiences, but that of others as well.
And that's the thing, like these encounters are usually so unique and so personal that you may find some common ground between them, but I guess the real depth and the real beauty of each encounter is that how each person interprets it. Because I'm sure that you've been out with people who have had something happen, but they've taken it a completely different way.
Yeah, and sometimes incorrectly.
Yeah.
Again, that's a topic for another time.
Here's a great question from Michael Lane, and this is something that a lot of people reference with Yowie encounters. Have you ever smelled one? Because this is something that gets brought up a lot. Like, one thing that gets brought up a lot for me is, like a burning electrical smell.
Yeah, like the one that hit me.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, like sulfuric. Burning electrical, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the interesting thing is that when people have, well, a lot of people have these encounters, they associate a smell, some sort of odour with that creature. Now, quite often it's going to be like rotten eggs, it'll be rotten garbage, wet horse smell will come up regularly. Now, burnt electrical, sulfuric comes up regularly as well. So on this particular night that I was hit, that's the first thing that I smelt was this Bakelite burning electrical smell. And I thought it was just an odour coming out through the fissures of the rocks, because it was all very damp and there was like moss and all that sort of jazz around. It was sort of kind of slippery, and I thought that must be what it is. And I'd radioed down the base, and Steve, the policeman there, said, careful, because you know what that could be associated with. Very complacent. But it ended up that was actually one of them, that smell. Yet when I was hanging out with the friendly one all those times and so close to him all those times in the Blue Mountains, this is not a smell, not ever, not once.
So it potentially could be attached to some form of aggression?
Well, they're saying the male gorillas can let off an odour as a defence.
Yeah, right.
Now, again, it comes down to the fact that we don't know everything about these creatures, these beings.
Yep.
We don't know what they're capable of or not.
It's it's an interesting element of these creatures, because it's something that's kind of brought up fairly often, and it's, for me, it always seems to be around those more aggressive types of encounters where people are kind of getting herded out. And I wonder if it's like my completely uneducated guess is that they're pissing everywhere. They're marking their territory. And I wonder if that's what they're doing, is that they just have this absolute pungent smell that they can just produce. I wonder if that's the case.
Well, back in the many years ago when Dr. Helmut Luftswissauer was around, he's the only Australian academic at the ANU that was very vocal about this. He'd done decades of research in different countries on the same subject, a German background. And he always said to me that his belief was that, which is all flesh and blood, of course, he believed that because they're covered in hair, especially their bottoms, when they defecate, they're not going to clean themselves properly, and that's where the smell originates from. I'm not too sure about that. Mm. I mean, it could come down to diet and these differing types of smells, but yeah, there's certainly probably about three leading smells that are associated with the owie.
Yeah, that's it's an interesting topic, and it's something that can you can really dive down on. This might be a loaded question, and you can say yes or no if you want to answer it or not. The Patterson-Gimlin film, what's your thoughts on it? You can say pass. Don't buy it?
No, nothing makes sense.
Fair enough. Fair enough. It's something that I've always been very weary of.
I have my reasons for saying that. I've got reasons for saying that, but you know, again, I'll hold those over for perhaps the next time.
That we'll have that conversation after we stop hitting record, I think, because I'm very interested to hear that. There was a really great question here. Oh my goodness, it was.
Are we running over time yet?
A little bit, but that's okay. I'm sorry, I can't remember who asked it, but it was about gifting. What's your thoughts on gifting?
Yeah.
It was Craig Zammit. So Craig Zammit,
G'day, Craig. Craig. Everyone knows Craig Zammit.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, Craig's a great guy. We all love Craig. Yeah, absolutely, Craig. Yeah, you're right on the money. Yes, there are gifting, and it's called this bartering. That's been happening for, in all cultures, really, with them, America or here or wherever. It's always gone on, whether it be the Aboriginals or the white people, but it's going on today.
Yeah, right. So how close are you to trading Gary?
No, he cries too much.
Look, these are all great questions. So let's see if there's anything else, because we might be able to wrap this up and okay, here we go. Another great question. This one came in from Ben as well. What do you agree with regarding the documentary on the missing 411? So, have you seen
Pilates? That? Yeah,
yeah.
Pilates, tomato, tomato.
Mr. Pilates. Have you seen the documentary, Missing 411?
Yeah. He's on the right track. I don't necessarily believe everything, as no one should. But yeah, essentially, yeah. As I've always said, yeah, there's a lot of missing people in this country attributed to the owie.
Yep.
And of which I've nearly been one on quite a few occasions. I'm very fortunate.
I have this one hasn't been asked, and I'm absolutely astonished, so I'm going to ask it. What's your thoughts about the government knowing that this creature exists and hiding the fact? Now, I am working to get my hands on a army handbook for around this area, because apparently they have protocols in it for, it's in Ingham, so about 2 hours south from where we are. They have protocols in their handbook about how to deal with a Yowie encounter.
I'd like to see that.
If I get my hands on this, you'll be the first person I send it to. But what's your thoughts on it? Do you think the government knows about these things?
Yes, the government does know about this, and that's about all I can say about that.
All right. That's a rabbit hole, I think. That's a offline rabbit
hole. They do know about it, yes.
Yeah, because the implications of these creatures, if it was just commonly known.
Huge implications. Absolutely. And the ramifications on the economy is enormous. It's all different spectrums of the economy, and it's logging, mining, and there's the tourism and
national parks, real estate,
and just public hysteria and the rest, and also there's public liability, and that's a huge one.
Oh yeah,
you know, what do you know about them? How dangerous are they? And then being sued because there's no signs up. A lot of our witnesses who've had a traumatic experience have said, "Why aren't there signs?"
It's a fair question.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a naive question. It's a fair question. It's a naive question. But it's a very honest question above all, because suddenly their world is just changed.
Yeah.
Why aren't there signs?
Yep.
I mean, I can understand why there's no signs. You could probably understand why there's no signs.
Indeed. Indeed. Look, we might have time for maybe one or two more questions, and then we might look at wrapping up tonight. I think that might be it. I think everyone's kind of questioned out. Okay.
Everyone's gone home.
Yeah, maybe. We are running quite late tonight. With dash cams being so widely used now, why do you think there hasn't been any clear footage? Now, this is a loaded question.
Because there has been, but I call them all fake.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm also going to answer this, is that not just relating to dash cams, because everyone carries their phone on them. Like, everyone's got this little device in their pocket that captures amazing 4K quality video. The last thing that people are going to think when they are seeing this gigantic monster standing in front of them is, I'm going to get a selfie.
Now, if you have a manual camera, you are not going to take the time to pull that out of your pocket, you know, open it up, put your password in, whatever. Get that app up, and then take a photo. That's the last thing that's on your mind. Self-preservation is what's on your mind. When it comes to dash cams, there's been a couple of images and or videos sent to us. Highly questionable as far as I'm concerned, but there will come a time with the prevalence of death cam with dash cams. that there will be footage, absolutely, because a lot of our sightings, a big percentage of our sightings are roadside.
Yeah, I think it's really a matter of technology catching up with our will to find these creatures, because FLIR drones are becoming more and more accessible. I recently saw that the US Army is developing FLIR drones that are essentially silent.
Yeah, so good.
And you somehow need to get your hands on that, because I think drones will be the game changer for this. Because with your insight about how these things, they don't disappear; they just hug the tree. They blend in that way. This changes that. If you were able to get that bird's eye view and see that this creature isn't moving away, it's still right there. That really levels that playing field. So, because that kind of will answer one person's question is like, do you ever think we'll get proof or capture proof? I think we've captured more than enough proof of these things.
Yeah, well, it's really stepped up in the last couple of years, again, particularly because of having a great crew and this technology we've taken on board. I think we'll end up getting more footage over the next 6 to 12 months.
Yep. And I'm going to end it on this question. This will be the last question that we take for the night. Is that, do you think they're hiding out in caves during the day at all? Have you got evidence related to caves with these creatures?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, just like any person living off the land, you make the most of any opportunity that you have. Home is always home. They'll always roam, but they'll come home. And you'll always have your particular places where you'd seek shelter along that trail. On that journey.
On their circuit type of thing.
On their circuit, yeah. And that's what it is. It's pretty much a circuit. It could be a massive hollowed out tree. It could be a cave. It could be one of these little dwellings that they build made of sticks and so on. In one of the early Aboriginal stories that I have here, it's saying that they'd make it out of stone. Like stones, just pile them up.
Oh, wow.
And use that for shelter.
There you go. Very interesting stuff. Dean, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show tonight. It's been such a treat. It's taken us, like we said at the start or the first episode, depending how you're listening or watching this. Took us a little while to get you here, but I tell you what, it's been well worth the wait, mate, because it's been fantastic chatting to you. Your insight, your knowledge, it's second to none. And we really only scratched the surface of what we kind of planned to talk about tonight, because you brought us an absolute goldmine of...
We haven't even started on these pictures yet.
Yeah. This is just stuff that you guys have seen a little bit of. Some of the things that Dean showed me, I gasped when he showed me. And that's not even me being dramatic. I was literally floored. So, Dean, this is an open invitation for you to come on the show anytime you want to share some of these goodies.
Well, if your listeners want me back, there's enough support there. We can talk about that in the future.
Well, it looks like the ball's in your court, guy, so I'm leaving this one up to you. Dean, where can people find you if they aren't already following you?
YowieHunters.com. YowieHunters, one word, .com. As easy as that.
And you will find just the best crew of people. Not only the people that you have on your team, but the forums, the everything that goes along with that, because you literally, you have an army with you.
A lot of the people on the forum, the AYR forum in particular, some of these guys have been around for a couple of decades and they know their stuff. So if you've got questions, it's another good place to seek your answers.
Indeed. And guys, if you like this content, be sure to subscribe to the podcast. Subscribe to Dean's YouTube channel, because honestly, you have to. If you haven't seen the footage, he's got two. He's a bit fancy. This guy pumps out more content, and you put so much work into the videos that you do that it makes me feel.
It makes me feel sick too.
Yeah. There's really the only person that might be outdoing you for content is those boys over at the Paranormal Portal who seem to be putting out content 24 hours a day.
I forgot his name.
Her name.
Bert.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, who knows? Small time guys.
Yeah.
Whatever. Who knows? But look, guys, thank you so much for tuning in tonight. And if you do want to see Dean back, let us know. Hassle Dean a lot, so much. Hassle me. And
I feel like it's a telethon.
Indeed. Call in now. Actually, we didn't even get to the call-in lines. There's just so much great content for donations. Us to go here. If you guys do want to support us, indeed, share us with someone. Share us with your friends. That's honestly the best way that you can support me, and I assume that would be one of the best ways people can support you is by just sharing you with the world.
All right. So let's wrap this up for tonight.
Indeed. Thank you very much, guys. I've been Cade Moyer. This has been Dean Harrison, and you have been joining us for the Believe podcast.
And that's going to do it for tonight. And remember, if you have had an encounter, get in touch with me. My email address is believe@ccradio.com.au. Or you can message me on Facebook, and that's facebook.com/BelieveUFO Radio. Until next time, stay safe, and you've been listening to Believe Australian Paranormal and UFO Radio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.